Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
I'm Ana Mateo. This program is made for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. Andrew Smith answers another question from one of our listeners in Ask a Teacher. On Words in Their Stories, we ask the question, what does it mean to hit pay dirt? I will bring you that story later in the program. And we will end the program with American Stories. This week, we bring you The Purloined Letter, a story by Edgar Allan Poe. We hope you enjoy. But first, my co-host Brian Lynn brings us this report.
Technology company Microsoft is working with the Roman Catholic Church to create a detailed digital version of St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City. The project aims to give people a new way to experience the famous building, which sits in the Catholic Church's spiritual and administrative center in Rome. Roman Catholic leaders recently joined Microsoft's president, Brad Smith, to present the new digital creation to the public. The official launch of the system has been set for December 1st. It will permit individuals to explore St. Peter's Basilica online and provide interactive experiences for all visitors to the Vatican. The effort involved drones flying around the empty basilica for 4 weeks to capture images of all parts of the building. The drones, equipped with many cameras and lasers, took more than 400,000 high-quality pictures. The process used artificial intelligence, AI methods, to create a complete 3D copy of the basilica. One goal of the project was to provide a way for anyone in the world to have the chance to visit the church and learn about its history. Microsoft Chief Smith told a press conference at Vatican City, the project represented one of the most technologically advanced and sophisticated projects of its kind ever carried out. Cardinal Mauro Gambetti is the archpriest of St. Peter's Basilica. He praised the new technology at the press conference. Gambetti compared the highly detailed digital experience to looking up at a starry sky on a summer night. He added, the new tools act like a telescope or spaceship for better viewing. The project was launched ahead of the Vatican's 2025 Jubilee celebration. This marks a holy year at the Vatican when more than 30 million worshipers are expected to visit the basilica. This will be in addition to the 50,000 people who visit on a normal day. The basilica will celebrate its 400th anniversary in 2026. The Associated Press reported Pope Francis visited Smith and the project's development teams at the Vatican. He said the effort should help everyone feel welcome in this great house. The Pope added that the project was a way to recognize and continue to celebrate the Vatican's rich spiritual history. It is a gift and a task to care for it in both a spiritual and material sense, even through the latest technologies, he said. Pope Francis has warned that AI should only be used in ethical ways. In his World Message of Peace this year, he proposed an international treaty to control or regulate the technology. He argued that AI systems lack human values and could cause great harm. The digital system permits visitors to request entry times to the basilica. This could be a welcome change for visitors used to waiting in lines for hours to get into the basilica, which is one of the world's most visited buildings. The collected images have already identified structural damage and signs of deterioration. Experts said the technology can find such problems much faster and more effectively than human workers. Vatican officials plan to use the images to continually identify areas needing repairs. Smith did not say how much Microsoft had invested in the project, but he said the idea came after Pope Francis urged technology companies in 2018 to come together to use AI for cultural purposes. Smith noted his company had also completed similar AI projects at Mont-Saint-Michel in France and for ancient Olympia in Greece. I'm Brian Lynn.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Paola in Bolivia about the usage of the words most and almost. Dear teacher, I am having some confusion about the words most and almost. Sometimes they seem like the same to me, and I wish to know how they can be different. Thank you, Paola. I'm happy to answer this question, Paola. The word almost is an adverb. The word most can be an adjective, adverb, or quantifier. A quantifier is a word that describes how much of something there is. The words more, some, and all are other examples of quantifiers. As a quantifier, most simply means a majority of a group or the largest part of something. However, the phrase almost all of means nearly all of something, such as 90% or more. Some English learners have difficulty knowing when to use the preposition of with the words most or almost. We cannot put the preposition of directly after the adverb almost. Instead, we must use the two words all of after almost to describe a noun, as in this example.
Almost all of the children who got sick felt better within 48 hours.
When we use the word most as an adjective, we can simply put a noun directly after it when we are describing something in general, as in this example.
Most children enjoy playing games.
However, we use the preposition of after the adjective most when we describe something specific. The following two examples show this.
Most of the children in his class enjoy playing this game. Most of his friends live in the city.
The adverb almost means very nearly or very close. For example, if you have a job to do that takes an hour to finish, and you have already worked 55 minutes, you can say,
I am almost finished.
As an adverb, the word most can describe another adjective, as in this example.
That was the most beautiful sunset I have seen in a long time.
We sometimes use most without the word the as an adverb after any form of the verb be.
The thing I'm most worried about is her health.
Note, however, that we also often use the word the before most.
The thing I'm the most worried about is her health.
For our readers and listeners, what are your questions about American English? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And please include where you are from in your email, too. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. We give examples and notes on usage. Many valuable materials are buried deep inside the ground, such as gold, oil, and diamonds. But finding these riches and bringing them to the surface takes much time and effort. In the past, the term pay dirt was used to describe something found in the dirt that could bring you money. Gold is a common example of pay dirt. In fact, word experts say the term dates back to when North America's famous gold rush was happening. By the mid-1800s, thousands of people had come to parts of the United States and Canada to search for gold. The work was hard and dangerous. The weather and terrain presented many difficulties. Here is an example of how to use pay dirt from Cambridge's online dictionary.
Gold rushes continued into the 19th century as lucky prospectors struck pay dirt.
However, pay dirt does not have to be a valuable material found in the ground. These days, it can also describe something that produces money or profit. Or it can even be the money or profit itself. Here are some additional examples.
Email addresses are the new pay dirt in social media marketing. You can reach a possible buyer in their inbox. The musical group hit pay dirt with their song after it went viral on TikTok.
And that gives us the expression to hit pay dirt. To hit pay dirt means to do or find something that results in money or success. And like digging gold, it usually doesn't come easily. It requires work. When you hit pay dirt, you work hard to make money or profit from an idea or activity. We often use the verb hit when using the term pay dirt, but sometimes we also say strike pay dirt. This is similar to the expression to strike it rich. Many people have dreams of striking it rich one day. In her book, Gold Rush, author and illustrator Flora DeLarghi describes the process of hitting pay dirt. She writes that in order to get large amounts of pay dirt out of the ground, miners would have to break through layers of permafrost to reach the gravel bedrock beneath. This description demonstrates the difficulties faced by miners seeking to strike pay dirt. And that's the end of this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Our story today is called The Purloined Letter. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe. Poe is generally known for his horror stories. This is the third of three stories he wrote about Auguste Dupin and how he solves crimes. The story is about a stolen letter. It first appeared in 1844 in a yearly magazine. It was reprinted in many publications, newspapers, and books. This is one of Poe's stories that influenced the development of the modern detective story.
One evening in Paris, during the autumn of 1845, I went to visit a friend, Auguste Dupin. We were smoking our pipes and talking when the door of his apartment opened. Mr. Germain, the head of the Paris police force, came into the room. "I came to ask your advice," Germain said to my friend Dupin. "I'm trying to solve a very important case. It is also a very simple case, so I really need your help. But I thought you would like to hear about it, because it is so strange. My men and I have worked on this case for 3 months," Germain said. "It is a very simple case of robbery, but we still cannot solve it." Dupin took the pipe out of his mouth. "Perhaps the mystery is too simple," he said. Germain began to laugh. "Too simple," he said. "Who ever heard of such a thing?" I looked at Germain. "Why don't you tell us the problem?" I said. Germain stopped laughing and sat down. "All right," he said, "but you must never tell anyone I told you this. The wife of a very important person needs help. I cannot tell you her name, because her husband is a powerful man in the French government. Let us just call her Madame X. 3 months ago, someone stole a letter from Madame X. She is offering a large amount of money to anyone who can return the letter to her. We know that her husband's political enemy, Mr. Darcy, stole the letter. We also know it is somewhere in his apartment. Darcy plans to use the letter to embarrass Madame X's husband and destroy his political power. As you know, I have keys which can open any lock in Paris. For the last 3 months, my men and I have spent every evening looking for the letter in his apartment, but we cannot find it." Dupin stopped smoking. "Tell me how you looked for it," he said. Jamont moved forward in his chair. "We took our time," he said. "First, we examined the furniture in every room. We opened all the drawers. We looked under the rugs. We searched behind all the paintings on the walls. We opened every book. We removed the boards of the floor. We even took the tops off the tables to see if he had hidden the letter in the table legs. But we cannot find it. What do you advise me to do?" Dupin puffed on his pipe. "What does the letter look like?" he asked. "It is in a white envelope with a red stamp," Jamon said. "The address is written in large black letters." Dupin puffed on his pipe again. "I advise you to go back and search the apartment again," he said. About 1 month later, Jamon came back to see us. "I followed your advice," he said, "but I still have not found the letter." Dupin smiled. "I knew you would not find it," he said. Jamont became very red in the face. "Then why did you make me search the apartment again?" he shouted. "My dear Jamont," Dupin said, "let me tell you a little story. Do you remember the famous Dr. Louis Abernathy?" "No," Jamont shouted. "Get to the point, Dupin." "Of course, of course," Dupin said. "Once a rich old man met Abernathy at a party. The old man was not feeling very well. He decided he would get a medical opinion from the doctor without paying for it. So he described his problems to Abernathy. Now, doctor," the old man said, "suppose you had a patient like that. What would you tell him to take?" "Oh, that is quite simple," said Abernathy. "I would tell him to take my advice." Germont looked embarrassed. "Look here, Dupin, I'm perfectly willing to pay for advice." Dupin smiled at Germont. "How much money did you say the reward was?" he asked. Jamont sighed. "I do not want to tell you the exact amount, but I would give 50,000 francs to the person who helps me find that letter." "In that case," Dupin said, "take out your checkbook and write me a check for 50,000 francs. When you have signed the check, I will give you the letter." Germain looked at Dupin with his mouth open. His eyes seemed to jump out of his head. Then he took out his checkbook and pen and wrote a check for 50,000 francs. He gave it to Dupin. My friend examined the check carefully and put it in his pocket. Then he unlocked a drawer of his desk, took out the letter, and gave it to Germain. The policeman's hands shook as he opened the letter. He read it quickly. Then he put it in his pocket and ran out of the room without saying a word. "Dupin," I said, as I turned to my friend, "how did you solve the mystery?" "It was simple, my friend," he said. "Germain and his policeman could not find the letter because they did not try to understand the mind of the man who stole it. Instead, they looked for the letter where they would have hidden it. Mr. Darcy is not a policeman. He is, however, very intelligent. He knew the police would search his apartment. He also knew how police think, so he did not hide the letter where he knew they would look for it. Do you remember how Germain laughed when I said the mystery was difficult for him to solve because it was so simple? Dupin filled his pipe with tobacco and lit it. Well, the more I thought about it, the more I realized the police could not find the letter, because Darcy had not hidden it at all. So I went to visit Darcy in his apartment. I took a pair of dark green eyeglasses with me. I explained to him that I was having trouble with my eyes and needed to wear the dark glasses at all times. He believed me. The glasses permitted me to look around the apartment while I seemed only to be talking to him. I paid special attention to a large desk where there were a lot of papers and books. However, I saw nothing suspicious there. After a few minutes, however, I noticed a small shelf over the fireplace. A few postcards and a letter were lying on the shelf. The letter looked very old and dirty. As soon as I saw this letter, I decided it must be the one I was looking for. It must be, even though it was completely different from the one Germain had described. This letter had a large green stamp on it. The address was written in small letters, in blue ink. I memorized every detail of the letter while I talked to Darcy. Then, when he was not looking, I dropped one of my gloves on the floor under my chair. The next morning, I stopped at his apartment to look for my glove. While we were talking, we heard people shouting in the street. Darcy went to the window and looked out. Quickly, I stepped to the shelf and put the letter in my pocket. Then I replaced it with a letter that looked exactly like it, which I had taken with me. I had made it the night before. The trouble in the street was caused by a man who had almost been run over by a horse and carriage. He was not hurt, and soon the crowd of people went away. When it was over, Darcy came away from the window. I said goodbye and left. The man who almost had an accident was one of my servants. I had paid him to create the incident. Dupin stopped talking to light his pipe. I did not understand. "But Dupin," I said, "why did you go to the trouble of replacing the letter? Why not just take it and leave?" Dupin smiled. "Darcy is a dangerous man," he said. "And he has many loyal servants. If I had taken the letter, I might never have left his apartment alive."
The Purloined Letter was written by Edgar Allan Poe and adapted by Donna DeSanctis. The storyteller was Shep O'Neill. The producer was Lawan Davis.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. But join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Ana Mateo.